Welcome to the Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Drill to right field. That ball is hit well. It's to the wall, and it is gone. Jamer Candelario has his first Tigers home run. He showed some pop in the minor leagues, and that's his first big league homer with the Tigers. Jamer gets one back.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Throw does over the middle.
There you go.
Joe McQuinn, right side, to the house. Count it down with me, folks. 10-5, end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, that is big. How about 2-7, patrolling center field like a safety should.
Get ready. It's now drive time.
Barrett gets the snap, hands it to Weber. Weber sweeping left side to the Rutgers 45, to the 40, 35, 30, down the sideline. Weber to the 20, to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone goes Mike Weber with a 46-yard touchdown run to increase Ohio State's lead by 6 more.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocked the shot, and Gretzky ends 3-0. Los Angeles, Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it! DeMarco! 15 feet, 4 inches, center of the cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time, followed by Baseball and the Hockey Show. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Today is February the 21st, 2018, and tonight is show number 1,616. Glad to have you on board. Again, as I mentioned, as Ernie Banks would say, let's play two. Doubleheader tonight, Drive Time, driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. The Auto Show specials continue. My favorites, the Wrangler, 2018 Jeep Wrangler on limited sport, 4x4, $188 a month. That's right, $188 a month, 36 month lease. Go see the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik, today. 5:15 tonight, we'll be talking to Paul Woods, longtime color radio analyst of the Detroit Red Wings. Of course, the Red Wings trade Peter Mrazek to the Philadelphia Flyers. Ken Holland said the "we're open for business" sign is out when it comes to the Red Wings. So a trade deadline in the NHL is coming up on Monday. Top of the list, of course, is Mike Green. You've heard Nyquist, Glenn Denning, Ouellette, other folks as well. Red Wings drop a 3-2 decision last night to Nashville, home tomorrow night against the Buffalo Sabres. Matt Markey at 5:35 tonight. Then in the face-off, the Hockey Show, speaking of the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik, his son, Matt Mahalik, is going to wind down a pretty good amateur hockey career. Started playing in the youth leagues around Monroe, some travel hockey, into the OHL with Plymouth, again drafted by the Carolina Hurricanes in the NHL, and just finished his college career in Canada. He'll join us at 6:05 tonight at Face Off, the Hockey Show, which, by the way, is in its 18th year. Adam Krug will join us at 6:15 tonight. The Adrian Bulldogs, great college Division III program. They've won 15 straight games. They are in the playoffs, doing a lot of great things up in Adrian. And speaking of hockey, how about high school level right here at Savannah-Tamashanner? Coming up this weekend, the semis. St. Francis will take on Findlay. Northview taking on St. John's. Matt Crandall will join us at about 6:35 tonight to go up and down what he thinks about a big weekend of hockey coming up. I guess the big question here is, anybody able to knock off the number one seed, St. Francis? Basketball last night, the Rockets, wow, look out, one game lead in the MAC West. They got beat at Eastern Michigan University 85-79. Buckeyes, no surprise here. They were a 16-point favorite over Rutgers. They win 79-52. I mentioned the Wings in their 3-2 loss to Nashville. Bowling Green lost a close one. They won a lot of close ones. They lose to Akron as well. And, again, Olympic hockey, the United States goes down to the Czech Republic. I watched the replay today, 0-for-5 with a shootout and a pretty good hockey game. USA had plenty of chances in that one, just could not get it in behind the Czech Republic goaltender. So that's what's going on here. Again, a doubleheader here tonight. First, number one, Paul Woods of the Detroit Red Wings. Going to be an interesting conversation here. Red Wings actually played pretty well last night, but they've lost 3 out of 4. Nashville has won 4 out of 6. And the Red Wings, really, it's going to be a long shot. Ken Holland said it today in a lot of reports. They're going to have to play well, probably taking 7 out of 10 points the rest of the way in. You're going to need about 90 points to make it in the playoffs. And the other thing, too, it's never easy when you have four teams ahead of you in the standings. Positive for Detroit, they have games in hand. So do the Florida Panthers. But they got to start making some hay. No points last night, the Detroit Red Wings. All right, everybody, Paul Woods right around the corner. This is Drive Time, followed by Face Off, the hockey show. Remember, auto show specials continue. Visit MonroeSuperstore.com. The show is always driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. TAS Electronics update with Jim at the bottom of the hour, both on Drive Time and on Face Off, the hockey show, around 5:35 and 6:35 for the latest updates as well. So a lot of good things happening tonight. Again, from Sylvania Tamashanner, coming to you from the Loft Restaurant. My name's Mike Miller. Walleye tickets, by the way, to give away on Face Off, the hockey show tonight, Sunday's game. All right, everybody, stick around. Paul Woods right around the corner talking Red Wings. This is Drive Time, ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, home of the Buckeyes, home of the Lions. Michigan plays tonight on Nash Icon, by the way. Stick around. Drive Time. Paul Woods right around the corner.
And 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. Coming to you from the TAS Electronics, ranked number one here at Sylvania Tamashanner. Matt Markey coming up at 5:35 tonight. Matt Mahalik at 6:05, former Plymouth Whaler goaltender drafted by Carolina. His college career is winding down. We'll talk to Matt. Adam Krug, Tori's brother, by the way. I know he doesn't like hearing that, but he's the head coach at Adrian College. They've won 15 straight. They're trying to make it to a Division III national championship game in Lake Placid. Then at 6:35 tonight, Matt Crandall, our insider on high school hockey. District is down to the Final Four. St. Francis and Findlay on Friday. Northview and St. John's on Saturday. The two winners will play for the championship. So a big night of hockey. Speaking of hockey, joining us now, longtime color analyst on the Detroit Red Wings radio network, Paul Woods joins us. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hey, good, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. As always, appreciate you taking the time between games, Paul. We know what the schedule is. We tried to give you a day off, but I said, you know what, we got to talk a little Red Wings. Were you surprised at all by the Mrazek trade?
Not really. You know, I think they're in that sort of mindset right now. And then for Philadelphia, it made all kinds of sense with their two starters getting injured. So good move by Ron Hextall. But it frees up some salary cap space. And that flexibility, I think, in my idea, probably the most important thing the Wings got back in return. So they had $9 million tied up in two goalies this year. Now, if it stands with Jimmy Howard and Jared Crow, it's closer to $6 million. So it's about a $3 million savings going into next year. So it'll definitely help a little bit more flexibility and maybe, you know, a chance at a different roster player.
Paul, I read someplace today, I'm not sure where it was, but the open for business sign, we've known that for some time, is Ken Holland, the general manager of the Red Wings, trying to accumulate draft choices. We hear names like Mike Green. I'm guessing it's all but certain that he'll be gone, but Nyquist and Glenn Denning and, you know, Ouellette and some other guys as well. Going into the trade deadline on Monday, Paul Woods, what do you anticipate? Not only for the Red Wings, but the league as a whole.
Well, I think it's going to be busier than last year, Mike. I think there will be more action. There's just a lot of teams that there's a lot of buyers that are close, and it just wouldn't take much to make a difference. But Mike Green is definitely a very talented player and highly thought of. So interesting to see what the return is. Now, the thing about Mike is, like Rick Nash, he's an unrestricted free agent, so that's the big question mark. How much will teams give up? And that's, Mike, you know from all your experience, it takes two parties to make a deal. So it's just not what you're giving up, it's what you're getting back. It's got to be fair on both sides. So if the purchaser is not willing to give you enough, then you can't make that deal. You're not going to give guys away. So it's sort of it's going to be interesting to see what the market actually bears for guys like that. But one thing I want to say, dude, Mike, is like, I heard that same phrase about, you know, being open for business, but the other side of the coin is that they also said that they're going to stay competitive. Like, that's the most important thing. You've got to be competitive through this rebuilding, retooling, whatever you want to call it, and not fall way down, because sometimes you get way down, it's much more difficult to get back up.
Paul Woods joins us here on Drive Time, home of the Lions, the Ohio State Buckeyes, Michigan Wolverines, over on Nash Icon, longtime Detroit Red Wings commentator, former player as well. Speaking of which, do a little math today, Paul. I'm looking at that Western Conference and Florida, the mix. It's not so much Detroit, you know, that they got to put a run together, number one. They've lost some games late, which hurt. Boy, I got to tell you, I watched two periods last night. They played pretty darn good with a very good Nashville team. But I'm looking at 88 or 90 points. Now, it's going to take something to, for the Red Wings to get in there. But I think more importantly, the other team's got to falter a little bit that are ahead of them in the standings.
Well, they've been doing that, Mike. And see, that's the thing that sort of kept alive. And that's the frustrating part. Like, you know, like the last three games we played against Nashville twice and Toronto once. So those are three of the top six teams in National Hockey League. Both teams scored seven goals. Like, it's right there. And that's just not those teams. It's every team we play. But we've missed some points here as of late, and we could be a lot closer. We're 8 points out. We could easily be 4 points out with 23 games left. Now, that's doable. So we've got to make up some ground. This is a big, big weekend. We start tomorrow against the Buffalo Sabres, and then we get the Carolina Hurricanes, one of the teams we chase on Saturday. They're playing home against Pittsburgh Friday. If the Penguins can work their magic, beat them. Then we take on the Rangers on Sunday, and who knows what they're going to look like on Sunday because they've got the for sale sign up as well. So all of a sudden you can rattle off, like just what you said, three or four games in a row. The thing is, Mike, it's not going to take as many points as people thought in the Eastern Conference just for that final wild card spot. There's about five teams, including the Blue Jackets, who own that spot right now, that are battling for it. But, again, we just got to get on a roll right now, get a lot closer. I mean, even after the trade deadline, I mean, it's, you know, it's funny how it goes. Like, you know, it's, I keep using the Vegas Golden Knights as an example. Like, there are no superstars in Vegas yet. They're the best team in the Western Conference. So hockey's about playing together, five-man groups playing together out there. And we've shown signs of it, lots of signs of it during the course of a season. We just haven't done it consistently enough.
You know what, Paul, you make some good points here. There's no doubt about it. Finishing and putting the puck in the back of the net, I mean, it seems to be contagious at times. Detroit's getting chances. The work ethic is certainly there. I shake my head at times when people want to criticize Jeff Blashill. I mean, I see a team that by no means are throwing in the towel, and shift for shift, the young guys are working, and it's hockey. I mean, it's tough to win in the National Hockey League. There's no easy games.
And, you know, Mike, the thing about that, too, is that we're a better team this year than we were last year, and that's the sort of thing I look for. I just look for improvement every year, and I'm thinking, again, no matter what happens to the trade deadline, then, you know, with more salary cap flexibility, they can make some moves in the summertime. They can be involved in some of these transactions, but my point is next year, we're going to be better again. But again, if we're just a little bit better again next year, like right now we're on the edge, that should be enough to get us in the playoffs. So, and that's the most important thing, Mike. Like, our young guys need to be playing meaningful games. They need to be in those important games. And, you know, the team we're playing tomorrow night, the Buffalo Sabres, there's an example of they had a really good team not too long ago, maybe, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, and they blew it up, as they said, and they haven't recovered since. There's no certainty that you'll rebuild that team. Edmonton's got, they say, the greatest player in the game. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, the last time, they've been in the playoffs once in 2006. So it's not a perfect science just saying, well, we'll trade guys away and get draft picks. That'll make us better. Some of those draft picks will never play in the National Hockey League. So I say when you're there and you're close, your job to your team and your coaches and to your fans, most importantly, is to be competitive and battle every year for a playoff spot. In my mind, that's still in the Red Wings' thought process and their culture.
Again, talking to Paul Woods, longtime Red Wing player and longtime color analyst and commentator on the Detroit Red Wings radio network. Paul, you mentioned some of the young guys. I mean, are you seeing significant improvement in the likes of, say, Mantha, Larkin? Everybody knows what he is, and I'm guessing off the top of my head, Athanasiou, and who else? Bertuzzi, maybe another guy that fits into that category. Where are they at in your eyes right now?
Really made a big improvement, Mike. That's the encouraging thing. Like, they've just, you know, like last year, I just was the opposite. I just said, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. Like, they're not there yet. Like, you know, they've got potential, but they can't play both sides of the puck. They can't play offense and defense at the same time. And that's critical to play in the NHL, to be a, you know, regular player. But, Joel Larkin just made massive strides in the offseason. And again, he played in the World Championship. That helped him a lot. But, he's been dynamic, and, they can put him against anybody right now. It doesn't matter where he plays, home or road. So, he's going to get better. I mean, we just made huge strides from last year. And then Mantha with 20 goals. You know, Anthony Mantha could end up, he had like five shots in the third period alone last night. But he's thriving on that top line with Zetterberg and Nyquist. So that's a good sign. And happened to see you, like, he's dynamic. He's electric. Like last night, he just made some dazzling plays with that speed, scored a beautiful goal in a breakaway. So he had 2 points. That's encouraging. He's got 11 goals. So he's on pace for, you know, 17, you know, almost a 20 goal season. So lots of good things. Nick Jensen, I think, has really been a big surprise back in the blue line. All of a sudden now he's using that fantastic skating ability. Him and Daniel DeKeyser have become a good pair. Trevor Daly's been a great addition. He and Erickson's been our best defensive pair all season long. Bertuzzi, I think, has got a big upside. I think he needs more ice time. I think he'll get that soon. That's going to be a positive as well. And then they got down there, they got Hickets, of course, in the minors, and Sveshnikov and Rasmussen, the kid that's back playing junior hockey, Dennis Chalowski. So they've got some pretty good players in the pipeline. But I think this flexibility, Mike, like, again, if they get some salary cap space, and all of a sudden before training camp, in the summertime, they got a chance maybe to add some veteran players, some free agent guys at a lower price, and maybe get two or three guys instead of one guy, and all of a sudden we make up a little bit of ground we've been missing now the last couple of seasons and get ourselves back in the playoffs.
Yeah, you mentioned Svechnikov, and not getting sidetracked here. I saw his brother and Barry a couple of weeks ago. What a show he put on. He's projected to go number two overall. Hey, before I let you go, Paul Woods, any thoughts? Listen, on the Olympics, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot. I know the numbers are way down on NBC. A lot of people say because of the 14-hour time difference and a lot of other reasons. Any thoughts on, well, number one, the National Hockey League not being there, and number two, any observations from what you've seen or what you've heard?
I haven't seen many games, Mike. I've just seen some highlights and mostly the scores and stuff. And good for Canada. They're into the semifinals now against Germany. That was a huge upset for Germany knocking off Sweden. But, it's not, when you haven't got those best players that's lingering in your mind, you start to thinking what it might have looked like, and you start putting those teams together. And it's just amazing the quality, the level of play on the United States and the American team. And then, of course, Team Sweden and Team Russia and even Finland. So it would have been something else, but I hope to go back in 4 years. But for the guys involved right now, it's a thrill of a lifetime. And, of course, a couple of former Red Wing coaches, Tony Granato and Chris Chelios, were involved with Team USA and had a frustrating loss to Czechoslovakia. But it's a great moment in those guys' lives. I know I played once for Canada in World Championships over in Russia, and it was one of the most intense things I ever did. And just, like, the feeling of representing your country, it's just such a powerful thing, and you just take it so seriously. I remember they'd play that national anthem when we won, and it was like the greatest moment ever. And then when we lost, it was like agony. Listen to the other team's national anthem, you know, line up in that blue line. So I understand, I guess, the importance of it, and I know it meant a lot to me. But it's funny, Mike. I just want to say one thing too, and just to show you again, I guess this is the level of the NHL. Like Rasmus Dahlin, there's so much talk about him being the first pick in the entry in draft, and Svechnikov too. But like, he played a combined total of 4 minutes and 26 seconds for Team Sweden at the Olympics.
Wow!
Like a healthy scratch in Game 1 and 3. Like, I'm not being critical of him. I'm just trying to tell you the difference from playing junior hockey and playing in the National Hockey League.
Oh, it's huge.
It's a big, big jump. And he's only 17 years old, don't get me wrong, but just people say he's going to come in and light up in the NHL. I've heard this story many times. It's not easy. The NHL is just a different situation, as you know from your experience. And but good for those guys in the Olympics. It's got to be quite a thrill for those guys to go over there and represent their country.
Well, I got to tell you, we felt it when you talked about your anthem there. It had to be a tremendous, tremendous thrill for you. And as you mentioned, the intensity level sky high. Hey, Paul, thanks for coming on. Anything I missed going forward for the Red Wings, for our listeners that are knowing Toledo in this area right now, stuck in traffic someplace? So anything else you want to touch on that I forgot?
Just one thing, Mike. I just always tell people we're a lot closer than people think we are, and they're not a bad team. What you said about Jeff Blashill's accurate, too. Really, they're a resilient team, Mike. And just when you think they've played bad hockey games and now they're going to think they bounce back and win a couple more games and they're back in the battle again. So he's a composed guy. He's resilient, and he's had his hands full, but I think he's done a real good job these last couple of seasons.
Good stuff, Paul. Thanks for coming on. Great hearing your voice. Appreciate it. And somewhere down the road, we'll chat again. Thanks.
All right, Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's Paul Woods, analyst, Detroit Red Wings Radio Network, former Montreal Canadian, former Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound, former Red Wing, and been on the radio a long time, along with Ken Gell. Detroit Red Wings are home tomorrow night against the Buffalo Sabres. All right, everybody, TAS Electronics update right around the corner. TAS Electronics, a lot of great things they have. I got to tell you, that remote car starter, we got a couple of them in the family. Been a great winter to have those. A lot of other things, of course, coming up as well, thanks to our good friends, TAS Electronics, for all they do for this show and this community. Car stereos, car starters, all sorts of things. Security systems, Al Pappy, his crew, been around a long time, TAS Electronics. Then, right around the corner, Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor, after this.
The cure for annoying traffic jams. It's the Drive Time Show on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. I want to thank color analyst on the Detroit Red Wing Radio Network, Paul Woods, who joined us at the top of the show. Talk some Red Wing hockey as the NHL trade deadline approaches on Monday the 26th. Speaking of hockey, coming up at 6:05 tonight, Matt Mihalik will join us. OHL local goaltender, went on to play in college, played his final game. He'll join us at 6:05 tonight on Face Off, a hockey show. 6:15, Adam Krug's got that Adrian College hockey team doing great things. They've won 15 straight, trying to win a national championship for the Bulldogs. And high school hockey's down to its final four here this weekend at Sylvania Tamashanner. Final four in the district. So we'll talk some high school hockey on Face Off, the hockey show. Joining us now, like he does every Wednesday, dependable indeed, he is the outdoor editor of the Toledo Blade. Matt Markey is his name. His appearance, as always, is brought to you in part by Netcraft on Briarfield Boulevard in Maumee for everything you need to fish for bass, walleye, and anything else that swims. And by your story, of course, on Tuesday, you might have to go a little north besides getting great equipment at Netcraft, Mr. Markey, as the ice really is going the other way down in this neck of the woods.
It is, Mike, and the same thing has happened in the last couple of days up in Saginaw Bay, where a lot of the ice is just mushy now. With you get the warmer air is one thing, and then the warmer rain, you know, it sits on top of the ice, and that has a, you know, kind of accelerates the melting aspect there. Plus, the weight of the water on top of the ice, you know, is a factor. And we've had some big cracks develop, and it's you know, when it goes, it breaks up in a hurry, as we saw on the Maumee River just this past week. It was ice covered, and then we had rain and a little bit of warm weather, and all of a sudden, here comes the ice. It's, you know, flying down the river and out into the lake, and it's pretty much wide open on the Sandusky and the Maumee now.
I got to tell you, I had a visual show last week, man. I was up in Windsor, and, of course, the Detroit River coming out of, Lake St. Clair there. And I was between appointments, a couple of our radio sponsors, and a luncheon for the hockey broadcast I do up there, and had about a half hour to kill. And I was out there on Riverside Drive watching this ice move up and down the Detroit River. I mean, it is almost, I mean, it's startling. Number one, the speed that it moves and the size of some of the patches and some of the craters and some of the continents of ice.
Yeah, it's got incredible power, and we don't think of that too often, but some of those chunks of ice that are flying down the river, you know, are the size of a picnic table or the size of a Volkswagen Bug with a lot of weight and sharp edges and all. And we saw the kind of destructive impact it can have, Mike, a few years ago, if you recall, when the Maumee broke up a certain way at a certain time, and we had ice shoves way up into the cemetery there by the 475 bridge on the Perrysburg side, on the Maumee side, excuse me. On the Perrysburg side, we had a lot of ice out in that field there behind Buttonwood. A lot of trees, were knocked down. The fence and some of the headstones in the cemetery were victims of it. That ice comes with incredible size and weight and power when it's pushed by that water. So it's something we just kind of have to cross our fingers on each spring and hope that transition takes place without a lot of destruction, because sometimes if you get an ice jam downstream, it holds all that back, and then when it cuts loose, it can really accelerate, and it can also widen out across the floodplain and do a lot of damage.
And talking to Matt Markey, Toledo Blade outdoor editor, and I'm looking at this photograph of Eric Herzl of Erie Gold Fishing Adventures. That's a pretty nice looking walleye. I would have made that trip up to Saginaw. I do anyways a couple of times a month, but you got to applaud him. That's a 30-incher and a good-looking fish.
Yeah, he is normally ice guiding on Lake Erie during January and February, but because of the conditions on Lake Erie had been so unpredictable, and we had lost so much of that ice that we had formed around Christmas and New Year's, he decided to move his base of operations up to Saginaw Bay and had a fair amount of success with the fishing and a number of his clients. You know, people get that bug that they want to go fishing, and they were, you know, his clients made the trip from Ohio up there and were successful and caught quite a few walleye. But, you know, it changes so fast that, you know, a week ago they were out on good solid ice and catching a lot of fish. And today, it's probably not safe for a single soul to be out there. That's how rapidly it changes with these kind of wild swings that we've had in our weather. So, you know, he had to go where the fish were, but now he's back on our end of the border, and he's thinking about getting his boat ready and putting it in Lake Erie here as soon as he can. So you got to adjust on the fly. If you're going to go get the fish, you got to figure out how to do it.
No, no doubt about it. Matt Markey joins us here at Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor. From going north up in the Saginaw Bay, we're going south down on the coast of South America. Liked your story there in Sunday's paper, Matt Markey, about Scott and Alex Kozak at Toledo, and they were out, 17, 18 miles into the Atlantic, and all of a sudden they, or in the Pacific rather, and they, off of Costa Rica, and they find this sea turtle in distress, caught up in some netting and some other paraphernalia. Good for them to set it loose, but the first thing you think is, how many of these other creatures out in the Pacific and the Atlantic have some kind of impediment or netting on them as well? I'm sure it's much more common than we even want to imagine.
It is, unfortunately, and occasionally we'll see one of these turtles that will wash up on the beach somewhere that's already dead from being, you know, strangled in a fishing net or caught up in some other kind of trash that's out there in the ocean. And it was just good fortune that Scott and Alex were out there. You know, they're out there for a day of marlin fishing and hoping to catch some dorado, which elsewhere they're called mahi mahi. Great, you know, fighting fish, also a great one for the table. But, you know, they come upon this turtle, and it's, you know, a quick change. They bring all the fishing lines in. They have the captain take the boat back around. So they probably lost an hour and a half or so of fishing time, but they didn't care at all because it felt like it was their duty as stewards of the waters to go out and see if they could help that turtle. And they were just relieved that it wasn't injured to the point where it wasn't going to recover, because as soon as it was free of that net, it took off, you know, for the depths, and away it went. So it's a good ending to that particular story, but as you mentioned, you know, accurately, there are probably a lot of these that we don't hear about or we don't see because the nets or other trash that's out there in the ocean ends up claiming these turtles and other creatures, and it's unfortunate. We just need to be a lot more careful with what we put in the water.
Again, Matt Markey joins us here. And, of course, your story in Libby. You know, you mentioned about the turtle having a good ending. And because of Libby's long life at 15, I anytime you lose a pet and a companion and a dog like a border collie, which I'm familiar with, wish I could have had ours in a little bit more of a rural setting, but still see some of Jake's instincts every now and then. But I love your story on Libby. It's tough to lose a dog, whether it's, you know, with a car accident or hit by a car, but it sounded like Libby had a tremendous, tremendous life, and I had to laugh when I got to the point is, all of a sudden, Libby became your dog. Well, that's kind of how it is with Jake. Everybody's out of the house, and Jake's always 2 feet from behind where I'm walking and what I'm doing now, whether it's taking out the garbage or going out into the yard or taking them for a walk, so they latch on to who the leader of the pack is pretty quick.
They do, and Libby was great with the kids the whole time they were growing up, and just a wonderful, you know, companion and a watchdog, you know, with them, and so vigilant and so careful when they were outside. But after they were all off to college and other places, I think Libby looked around and I looked around, and it was just the two of us out there working, outside, because my wife's pretty busy with taking care of the inside. So we became, regular companions, and it wasn't something that all of a sudden one day you know, I just said, okay, it's you know, you and me, Levy. No, it was just, she just kind of latched on to me and followed me around. And every time I went out there, it didn't matter if it was 95 in August or if it was 10 below in January, she was right there and, you know, would not retreat, was always on duty. I was amazed by the instincts of that breed, you know, every single day. And we had 15 years to observe it, but it was just phenomenal to see how that instinct works and how they never waver from it. There wasn't, you know, there was a joke, I think, that George Carlin told maybe one time that dogs never take a day off, and she didn't. And it was, you know, it was tough to lose her, but we knew it was coming because, for, you know, 15 is pretty old for a dog. But I think living in the country, out running every day outside, she was an outside dog. I think that extended her life because she got plenty of exercise and was very fit even to the end, and just a real joy to have around. And you have to accept that you're going to lose them at some point because dogs don't live nearly as long as people do, but really a joy when we had her.
No, no question about it. And I see that photograph too, and that stare that the Border Collies have. And you know, again, they're just great companions, and the instinct you mentioned is unbelievable, century after century. It's just shocking at times as well. And I guess the other thing too, and I've talked to other people that, regardless of the breed, that they have an instinct. And you mentioned that the Libby went and hid when she knew she was passing away because they didn't want to draw scavengers towards you, still loyal to you. And animals, we kind of gone through the same thing. Not the quite exact same story, but they have a real sense when they're going to go. I mean, the behavior changes, where they sleep, where they want to sit, how they eat. And now, in your case, with Libby protecting you from scavengers, it's amazing to watch their cycle of life. It's a sad thing, but I think we've always explained to our kids, hey, we're going to have to go through losing one here because that's just how it is.
It is, and it's that the instinct playing so strong to the absolute very end, because as best I can relate, in her mind, you know, we were the herd, my wife and my children and I, we were the herd. So whether we're sheep or goats or people, her job was to protect us and to be ever vigilant, you know, and on watch and guarding all the time. So when it was her time and she sensed in some way that her life was about to end, she went someplace that she had never gone in 15 years. And really crawled underneath a pile of brush and just laid down there and died. And that's, you know, it's very puzzling. It's also somewhat troubling because my daughter, you know, who's going to school and still living at home, said, you know, I wish we would have been able to hold her and just to comfort her and
right.
So on. But that's not the way Libby wanted it done. And her instincts kind of ruled to the very end. So, you know, quite a dog, and just feel really, really, blessed and honored that, you know, we had her in our family for so long.
Oh, they're great. We've had some issues, I think, with Jake. Number one, not in a rural thing, that she is so protective of me. She does herd people, and she gets the nipping going a little bit. And we, you know, it's a tough thing. And she was a rescue dog that I think, I don't want to say her instincts were interrupted, but they were maybe tainted and retarded a little bit, where she doesn't quite understand, you know, exactly where her feelings come from. So she's been a little bit of a load. And, you know, it's funny because when we went down to rescue her after having a border collie, very similar to what you had, Matt, we lived in a more rural area when I was up in Kalamazoo and had our first border collie, Ariel, until she was 16. And the kids, even when we moved into the more populated area from Kalamazoo into Temperance, kids would be outside playing wiffle ball or whatever. This was a constant herd with these kids in the driveway, wherever it was. You're not getting near the street. It's amazing to watch their intelligence and their loyalty, and as you say, their work ethic. Great stuff. Hey, what are you working on this week?
Well, I've got a piece for Friday on a young man, a fisherman that I know from South Dakota, who came up with a very novel, you know, concept that I think, why didn't somebody think of this before? He used to fish with his grandfather for many, many years, and then his grandfather passed away at 90, and this young man was in his early 20s then, and he realized, you know, I don't have any recording of his voice for all those hours and hours and hours we spent fishing and him talking about it, him talking to me about life and his life and so on. And he, this friend of mine, characterized his grandfather as a stubborn old Norwegian farmer and rancher, and he wore that tag proudly. And you know, so his idea, the Buddy Siner is the guy's name, his idea is to start an archive online and have people record audio of their dad, their grandpa, their brother, anyone, about their fishing experiences, you know. And he's calling it fishstories.org. And he wants to have those in a bank there so people can submit them, and also you can go there and listen to them. And I think it's a phenomenal idea, because I, you know, thinking about it, I wish I had those kind of recordings of some of the fish stories my dad used to tell, because they were incredibly entertaining. You know, sometimes they were embellished. I guess fishermen are kind of like golfers in that respect, but his idea is to put together this website. It's already up and running, and he wants to get people from all over the world to submit audio of fishermen telling their stories. And I said, well, no video? And he said, no, because when there's a camera involved, people act differently. And he said, if you just hear the voice, your mind can create the rest. And I thought that was a great way to put it. So I'm going to do a piece on that and then kind of promote that website, but also, you know, in a month or so, we'll be starting a series of regular stories of just people from the area. You know, tell me your best fish story, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, happy or sad, success or not, you know, just tell me your best fish story. So that's going to be running on Friday, and then on Sunday we'll start a three-day series of stories from a trip that I took in late in 2017, just to see what the impact of changing oceans and temperatures and everything is having on people and fisheries and so on. And I went to Prince Edward Island, I went to the Bay of Fundy in New Brunswick, and also spent some time in New England just talking to folks and researching that. So that'll be pretty heavy on the science, but also you know, look at the people's lives and how they're being impacted.
What a segue, Prince Edward Island. Ralph Mahalik, the Low Payment King. His son Matt played in the OHL, the Canadian Hockey League, and just finished his career playing at the college hockey at the University of Prince Edward Island, coming up in about 5 minutes. Matt, as always, thanks for coming on. I love, you know, parsing and talking about the things that you had written in the past week and getting the preview for next week. Let's do it again next Wednesday.
Mike, I got to tell you, I've mentioned this story to a number of people, and all the hockey fans know where Prince Edward Island is. The other people don't. So that tells you something right there.
Oh, it is a great area. I will tell you. There's a lot of folks. You're right. The hockey industry, very well aware of PEI, no doubt about it.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor. This is Drive Time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Back to close it out after this.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right. What did we learn today? Get in. They're going to have to go on a big roll, but you know, still, he made a great point. Buffalo went into a magic and huge rebuild, looking for some magic anyways, and they haven't been competitive in about 12 years. So Ken Holland trying to walk the tightrope here and basically just, you know what, stay competitive and build with some young kids as well. So that from Paul Woods. And the other thing I think we took from Paul Woods, who joined us at 5:15 tonight, he expects a very active NHL trade deadline coming up on Monday. That being said, his disclaimer was this: you got to have two to tango, and you know, really, things got to fit when it comes to salary. Guys that are unrestricted free agents, I mean, are the agents going to basically say, oh, yeah, we're going to make this deal, but we want a contract moving forward? There's so many things that, you know, really just basically play into this. But always an exciting day. Next Monday, the National Hockey League trade deadline. Matt Markey joined us, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor, one of my favorite segments all week long. Coming up, Matt Mahalik, his hockey career is winding down. Adam Krug, they're just winding up. Up at Adrian, the Bulldogs have won 15 straight, trying to win a national championship and make their way to Lake Placid, Division III. Maybe putting together a situation here where we might see if we can broadcast a game, schedule permitting. Who knows? Maybe Eve from Lake Placid. Matt Crandall then joins us at 6:35. Four teams left. High school hockey, St. Francis and Findlay on Friday, Northview and St. John's on a Saturday. All right, everybody, that'll do it. Another edition of Drive Time in the Books, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Kush was back at the studios. The Juggler back with Face Off the Hockey Show after this.